This week's episode is brought to you with the support of Bureau Veritas.
At Bureau Veritas, each and every one of us is by your side to help you navigate your decarbonisation journey and shape a better maritime world.
This is Green Seas, the podcast by Tradewinds about sustainability and the business of the ocean. I'm Eric Priante Martin, and today we're talking to the young shipping entrepreneur who's working to make zero emissions container shipping a reality. Danielle Southcott isn't just dreaming of cleaning up shipping. The startup she founded, Veer Group, has been sifting through bids from shipyards to build zero-emission container ships powered by wind and hydrogen. And when she says zero, she means zero. I interviewed her on the stage of the Tradewinds Shipowners Forum USA in New York, and just after our chat, she told me her company has signed a letter of intent to build these pioneering ships. Let's tune in. Danielle, I wanted to start off by, for this audience, if you could kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and about how Veer came to be.
Sure. So I may have a bit of a different background than some people here. My name is Danielle. I'm originally from the Great Lakes of Canada, and I started sailing on tall ships, so square rig vessels, at age 13. And basically never stopped or had very consistent routes in sailing. And through that path kind of took me down a bit of a mildly activist sort of teenage, early 20s time, where I started sailing on a ship called the Tres Hombres, which had no engine, and we sailed across the ocean. Well, they sail across the ocean consistently with cargo with no engine at all. It's very much like teenage, 20s, activist, pirate-type fun atmosphere. I loved that there, but I saw that it wasn't how I would approach the shipping industry. And their message is very much about cleaning up the shipping industry from a fuel perspective. So I have it's kind of a long story, but yada, yada, yada. We wanted to create a proposal for the shipping industry and for those who ship, as in the end clients, that would work at scale. And so that's how we came to develop Veer. I've been working in clean shipping for 12 years and have been working specifically on Veer for the past just over 3 years.
And you're beyond idea at this stage. You're actually looking at bids from shipyards. Tell us about what it's going to look like.
So our first vessel, design number one, is 100 meters length overall, or 328 feet. It's a container ship, and it's classified as we're working with the American Bureau of Shipping, and we've received complete approval in principle, and it will be an absolute zero emission vessel as defined by the International Maritime Organization. So we'll be using primary propulsion will be wind, so three Dynarig sails. If you've ever seen the Maltese Falcon or Black Pearl, these very large sailing yachts, we use the same proven Dynarig technology. And then we have a secondary propulsion. I hesitate to call it auxiliary because when we're in port, it'll be the primary propulsion of electric powered by green hydrogen gas, so fuel cells. We are on the cusp of signing a letter of intent to enter into contract negotiations with a European shipyard for a firm order of two ships.
I get excited by ideas like this, by proposals like this, by you know, moving, sort of redefining how we look at shipping, but also I'm surrounded by realists. And so I want you to like tell us how you think an idea like this, a zero emission ship that you really want to build and you want to operate, take us to the real. How do you make this possible?
So first of all, I would like to say it's a huge honor for me to be here. Thank you for having me here. I normally speak at places like at the you know, zero emission or clean shipping special programs, or at on behalf of Zesta, Zero Emission Shipping Technology Association, but also a lot in the green energy space and a lot in the ocean space. But rarely do I get to be in a room with realists about shipping, which is crazy, but it doesn't happen as much as it probably should. But this is very real. So all of our technology is independently verified, proven, although fuel cells are not used at scale. They're independently proven and type approval and everything. So none of the individual pieces of technology that we're using are technically novel. The innovative or novel aspect is how we've combined them. But again, we've already received complete approval in principle from the American Bureau of Shipping, so a big green stamp for that safety aspect, for that crew and operational aspects. And myself, again, not big ships like folks in here, but I am a captain and I have a sail endorsed license, so more like the boats on the walls.
We did this interview in the model room at the New York Yacht Club, where the walls are full of sailing vessels.
So I do have a pretty deep understanding of, is this real? Will this function? Will the ship perform? Will the crew be able to use it? Will it be safe? And I don't have all the answers, but we do feel quite confident.
Tell me about how the market that this ship will trade in will work, because we're talking about kind of smaller scale than the massive container ships that that we're used to seeing in the containerized supply chain. How does that work?
We're way smaller. So this vessel is, although I did just come here from Northern Iceland, where I'm doing a project with my friends and my husband on a traditional sailing vessel, hence the Icelandic sweater. And in the port that we're in Husavik, they do have container vessels and bulk vessels that come into that port that are even smaller than what we're proposing. So I will note that in Europe, they do have a lot of smaller vessels, whereas my understanding is here in the US, there's a lot more like tug and barge configuration. But we do have an interesting proposal, and more of our innovation is around business model and ship application. So basically, we have a small container ship that's capable of crossing oceans. So we're looking kind of at liner service, although the vessel can carry 152 containers. It's not a liner. So everyone says, okay, you're in feeder. But in reality, the vessel will shine sailing across the ocean. This ship can achieve 18 knots under sail. Actually, I think she can do 20, but the contract, they would only put 18. So this is a performance sailing vessel capable of crossing the ocean in winter North Atlantic conditions. So we are kind of carving out a new space for ourselves in terms of with clients and with charters.
And who will customers be for that type of service?
So we are currently looking for a long-term charterer. We are working with a charter broker on that. We've approached one shipping company firmly, but basically because this was a startup or innovative from almost every single aspect, we didn't want to approach the market too early, because getting that final price is so important, and getting our capital expense from the shipyards, or the estimate on how much the ship will cost, was very involved. And so we had some bids from shipyards. We received formal interest from 10 European shipyards, and we eventually got 5 firm bids from different shipyards. And I didn't realize how involved it would have to be, because it's not like ordering a ship out of a catalog or a standard vessel. So we had bids that were half the price of the other bids, if that makes sense. So we weren't confident to give a final charter price until very recently. But we're looking at containerized for this first vessel, this first iteration of this first vessel, because that's who's asking for it. That's Zemba, Patagonia, Unilever, Amazon, Target. They're all signing these things and making these public statements. NHS, UPS, like you name it, all these big companies are saying, we will ship clean, even though the IMO is going kind of slow, the ship owners, everyone's going kind of slow. The end user who ships in containers is publicly making these statements. And so we wanted a fast, clean, ocean crossing container ship. That's what we've designed.
You said that this is a different event than you're used to going to. What are your impressions on kind of what you've heard from, for example, ship owners on the stage today?
Do you want the whole truth or nothing but the truth?
Let's take them both.
It's in my conversations just in between here, you know, it's been really interesting, because a lot of the events I speak at, it's more oceans, energy, activists, like still, you know, for example, the Economist World Ocean Summit. That's not activists, but that's ocean space. Very environmentally focused. Also, the conversations I'm having with our private investors, very environmentally focused. So it was a little, it wasn't a shock. It'd be naive to say it's a shock, but it was a little bit of a shock to hear that your investors don't care about the environment. And that does not align for me with like every single other conversation I'm having. And just to put it in perspective, about half of my team is from Houston. My team are all like oil and gas or Blank Rome and ABS and 3D Marine and all these guys, and they care. And so I did find it pretty surprising.
Hiya, Craig here. I just want to take a minute to tell you about Wavelength, a new podcast from Tradewinds. It's a weekly dive into some of the top news as seen from the Tradewinds editorial staff, with insights from experts within our industries. So, to keep your finger on the pulse of the shipping and maritime sectors, search for Tradewinds Wavelength on Spotify, Acast, or any of the podcast platforms that you use, and then click to follow or subscribe. Or you can visit tradewindsnews.com and search for podcasts there too. That's Tradewinds Wavelength Podcast, a new weekly podcast for both subscribers and non-subscribers alike.
Let me ask you this. So I write about sustainability on a regular basis, and I do our sustainability podcast, and I hear people using the word zero emissions a lot. And so I wanted to ask you kind of, what is it? You have a very specific definition of zero emissions. You know, what does it mean relative to the way you're seeing the term often used?
We use the International Maritime Organization definition. So there are a lot of interpretations of the word zero, which I find pretty interesting that there can be interpretations of that number. We are looking at point of propulsion. So, of course, life cycle analysis is very important. Well to wake is important. Most recently, when I was a delegate as part of the MEPC at IMO, like 3 weeks ago or something, the term well to grave was proposed so that nuclear delayed emissions would be taken into consideration. But we're looking at point of propulsion, absolute zero. For us, we're also going to be using green hydrogen gas, so containerized, high pressure, 300 bar green hydrogen gas. So we are taking that into consideration, which is a bit more of a life cycle analysis approach. But anything, my golden rule is if combustion's involved, it's not clean. Does that mean it's evil? No, that would be giving an attribute to something that isn't good or bad. Is it clean if there's combustion? No. So moving forward using that, we've worked with absolute zero emission propulsion technology.
Just for a little bit of further definition on that, like, why would an internal combustion engine using green hydrogen not be zero emission?
Yeah, so green hydrogen, again, we put that color on top of the hydrogen that we choose to put on, but a certain purity level has to be attained, whether it's using recycled plastic, whatever. Hydrogen in a combustion engine mixes with air, and then it combusts. And in air, we have nitrogen, salt, we have all kinds of things in the air, right? And so then when you combust it, you burn it, you have emissions. And when you have that, it's mixed with air, then you're having NOx and SOx and all this stuff. I'm not saying it's not less, it's less. But it's not absolute zero emission. With hydrogen fuel cells, the PEM fuel cells that we're looking at, the only emission, again, there is an emission, and I always say this, emission doesn't mean something bad. Our vessels will have emissions. One will be sound, right, from the propeller having cavitation under the water, and one will be pure water, H2O. So our emission is pure water, which we actually technically can use as drinking water if we remineralize it, but that makes me a bit nervous, so.
I wanted to sort of ask you another terminology question, because I've heard you use it in I think it was an interview in Tradewinds with my colleague Holly Burkett. You said that you take an energy-based approach, and what does that mean?
This is a really there. I start getting into sort of like linguistics. This is becomes you know, I think I'm in talking about shipping, or I think I'm talking about energy, and I almost feel like I read more Noam Chomsky than anything else to learn about shipping, and I talk about linguistics. And so we have two terms that really get at me. One is decarbonization, and one is the fuel vocabulary or like lexicon that is used. And when we talk about fuel, we're talking about, yeah, whether it's hydrogen, ammonia, whatever it is, you know, bunker fuel, whatever. But we're excluding other things such as wind assist, primary wind, rotor sails, or solar. I'm not suggesting that tankers switch to solar, but we're cutting that out. We're cutting that whole energy-based, holistic approach, we're cutting that out. And so I really try to push the conversation to talk about energy and what are we using, because fuel is a commodity. And energy, if it's solar, wind, etc., is a non-commodifiable energy source. And then just quickly, the other one is this myopic focus on decarbonization, or the carbon molecule. And this is a very, very blinders-on kind of approach, especially when you start thinking about, well, what's the point? What is the point of us talking about carbon? Well, whether you believe in it or not, I'm not here to convince you, climate change is on the agenda. And so when you talk about carbon, the point of it actually is to cut greenhouse gas emissions, right? And so then you have to be thinking about nitrogen, sulfur, CO2, all these other ones. And so that's why some of those combustion-based fuels, ammonia gets an asterisk with that one, but including ammonia, methanol, etc., they have other greenhouse gas emissions that we need to pay attention to, because that's the point.
So this ship that Vera is working on, these two ships, powered by wind and hydrogen, but small scale, what from this can we apply to the rest of the shipping industry, right? So that it's not just something on the margins, but something that, you know, can be scaled up to what everyone else here is working on.
So yeah, we started with this 100 meter, 328 feet long mini container ship, because that was combining the existing technology. If you look at Maltese Falcon, she's 88 meters. If you look at Black Pearl, she's 106 meters. So we picked a vessel that we were confident we could have confidence with the hull form and with the Dyna rig, and we could kind of plug and play. If I wanted to do a vessel right now that was, you know, the 600-foot long Dyna rig, that's really getting really innovative, and as a startup, that would have been a lot to deal with. But what we're doing is taking those hydrogen fuel cells, we're taking all these different things, the wind, and we're applying that. And we're basically, I love to talk about the technology behind it. Please ask me about the technology behind it later. But I like to demonstrate the innovative business model and the innovative relationship based on clean shipping with those end clients. Proving that they'll pay for it, proving you can make money, proving absolute zero can cross the ocean, proving tick every box, and then basically say, now you have your first mover.
Can I ask you about the technology now instead of later?
You can, yeah.
Okay.
No, please. I just meant because I could go on.
I'm kidding. So the hydrogen fuel cells, we've seen actually the size and power of those increase, but it's still relatively small, right? So, and I'm wondering, you've obviously studied the kind of the trajectory of that technology. Where do you think it's headed? You know, how is there a time when a large ship can use a hydrogen fuel cell as main propulsion, in your view?
Yes, there is. Yes. So we're looking at PEM fuel cells right now. There's also the solid oxide fuel cells. But really, the fuel, we have a 2-megawatt system, so one on each side, port and starboard. Built up of 400, one of the companies we're looking at that we've not selected has 400 kilowatt building blocks of fuel cells. And the reason that is, it's quite small, I'm sure everyone here who knows about their ships is that's minuscule. The reason that it's in those building blocks is that's kind of brought over from rail, truck, and other applications. So right now we're kind of taking those building blocks from rail and trucks, marinizing them, because a salt environment is different, and then putting them onto a boat in series. But when we want to look at larger vessels, we need to have larger fuel cells, and that takes investment and development. But there's nothing that I've heard in my multiple visits and tours and lengthy conversations with multiple fuel cell providers. None of them have ever said that really the size would be the issue. It's that investment in getting those larger parts and the setup around that. But we're kind of plug and play from truck and rail, prove that it's viable, and then go on from there.
And kind of similar question for wind, right? We've seen wind propulsion really develop in the last couple of years. Where do you see that headed in terms of the percentage of a ship's energy that can be powered by wind in a larger scale?
Yeah, I think It's very good as a motive energy, like as a, like a prime mover. I don't know if I really see tankers with like wind turbines to generate energy for like house load, but as a prime mover, I do see it very much increasing. First of all, like, you know, if you look at the one organization is called the International Windship Association. Just go to their webpage, you'll see like 100 different projects all over, whether it's rigid wing sail, like there's all different technologies out there. Again, we're technology agnostic. Wind is a long-term investment that pays itself off in 5 years and has a lifespan of at least as long as the ship in general. Like, I have friends who run vessels and they say it saves me 7% consistently of fuel. So, like, you guys do the math.
So, last question is a regulatory one. We've got the IMO has set targets, but hasn't yet adopted the policy mechanism that would push shipping towards those targets. What do you think needs to happen so that ships like yours are more possible?
The IMO, I've been to the IMO on several occasions and spoken there on several occasions, but this past Marine Environment Policy Committee session, which was around 3 weeks ago, I'd never been to something that was so slow-moving. I'm not even trying to criticize. It blew my mind how slow-moving the IMO was. Again, that's not actually a criticism. That's how it works, because it's a discussion, and it is a response to things, basically, right? And that's an important mechanism because every voice is heard. But I couldn't believe it. I thought, people are looking to the IMO for innovation? That's the opposite of how that works. And so what I think what we need is first movers, and now I don't really want to be compared, but, you know, kind of like those sort of disruptive first movers, such as the Airbnb, such as the Uber, such as Tesla, you know, those category. I'm not forming an opinion on them. We need that to show that it's worth it, it's viable, it works, there's a market, and people are making money. And then it's going to happen. And then the IMO will come and they'll regulate it, because that's how that process works. It's not the other way around.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Danielle, for being here with us. And yeah, hope it works out.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
For more on shipping and sustainability, visit tradewindsnews.com/sustainability. And to get our Green Seas newsletter in your inbox, visit tinyurl.com/greenseas. Music for this episode is by Mammoth Music on Pixabay.